Introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
All right. We are back. It's the Pocket Protectors Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown, and we are reunited. And it feels so good. We got the whole crew back together. Had some scheduling mishaps the last time we were scheduled to be here together. But, you know, we're back. Got everybody here. We got our man Luke back with us from the left coast. But, you know, we'll go in the usual order here. Kick things off with my good friend, Dr. Eric Eager. What's going on, my man? How you doing?
Things are good, man. Just kind of enjoying some basketball and working on some interesting problems for PFF. So, yeah, things are great.
Good stuff. That's what we like to hear. Luke, my man, we've missed you. How you been? How you doing?
I'm doing good. I've been very busy working on my giant yearly training camp project where I talk about like all the players on the whole 90-man roster and go deep into their stories and like Google stalk them to a probably unsettling degree.
So far of the kind of fringish players that you started to research, like can you drop us a little gem? Like who's interesting so far?
Yeah. Okay. So my favorite player, because he's just so weird, is Johnny Stanton. He's a mini camp tryout that got to the 90 and kicked off like some other fullback. They have him listed in some places as a fullback and in some places as a running back. But at UNLV, he played QB and linebacker and also blocked a punt. He's all of those things. And I love how weird that is. It makes no sense.
So he's Joe Webb?
He's 6'2", 245.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think he's going to compete with CJ Ham for fullback, and it's going to be amazing.
He's Michael Robinson.
Yeah. Michael Robinson. Number 12, Penn State, right?
Yep. And then Seahawks and 49ers.
Yeah,
long fullback. Career.
And I like Rock Thomas a lot, too, because he was an Auburn running back, but he was stuck behind Kerryon Johnson and Peyton Barber, both of whom ended up drafted. So he just went to – he was like, screw this, and he went to a 2A school to go get reps, and I think that's like the awesomest decision ever. Like, screw you, I'm just gonna put good tape out there.
Yeah, I hope he makes it.
Beat up on some nobodies.
His tape was interesting, and JR told JR told us about him really early in the season, so it was cool that they ended up picking him up as a UDFA. So yeah, I am cheering for him, and his name's cool. So I mean, yeah,
gotta pound the rock.
But the all name team has to include Hercules Mataafa, right? I mean, like that's the one.
We were super disappointed. But I watched the draft with my dad, and we were super disappointed in the names. Because we have Mike Hughes and Brian O'Neill coming out of the first 2 days. Like, those are the two boring, boring names. And then we got, like, a Jalen, and I guess that's not that interesting even. Like, Jalen Holmes and Daniel.
There's a lot of,
and then we got Hercules Mataafa, and it felt better.
Yeah, a lot of different spellings of Jalen, though, in the NFL. If you've ever tried to, like, actually Google any of them. Yeah, but Hercules Mataafa is a good one. Interesting project for sure, especially given that Robinson's coming back for that like nickel role. I wonder if he ever has a chance to beat him out for that spot.
I wonder if Jalen Holmes will end up in that spot. They're going to move him inside, and he's kind of too small for that, isn't he?
Yeah, he very much projects as like a modern day interior player in the nickel and everything, which they play. People don't realize this, but they play nickel all the time. So,
I had somebody talking to me on Twitter about Michael Kendricks because he got released and being like, but he could play as the third linebacker and like be better than Gedeon. Gedeon averaged, I think, something like 35% of snaps. And for context, Robeson and Newman both averaged like 45, and Newman was rotating as the slot corner.
I must have been like, because he had Gedeon, if I counted correctly, had 244 snaps.
Yeah, that's like not much at all. That's less than Fredwell.
It was less than McKenzie Alexander, who was the backup nickel.
Yeah, both nickel corners had more snaps than Ben.
So, like, if you go with Kendricks, you're basic the second Kendricks. You're basically going to project that Barr isn't coming back. He's the Barr replacement, and in that event, but the problem is like the year that you have all three of them, you're basically betting on what the Eagles did. The Eagles wanted to trade Kendricks last year, but then Jordan Hicks got hurt. They played him a lot, but even then, Kendricks didn't play a ton because they played a lot of dime with Corey Graham at safety and Malcolm Jenkins at linebacker. So, sort of a little bit of a. I just don't know how much a third linebacker is going to help, especially if he's going to cost money.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be like a we want to get cheaper at Sam linebacker, and we're okay if we take a small downgrade because I think Barr is a little better than Kendricks, although Kendricks is a very good player. Like, it would be a get-cheaper-at-linebacker move, which is defensible.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it would be. It would not be Barr, Kendricks. That's can't be the plan.
You know, we definitely can't do that. But the other player, because, you know, we're going to seamlessly take this and get into the show here, the other player people are talking about is Kendricks, but there's also everyone's favorite retired, unretired, racist, maybe not racist, but probably racist, at least probably a bully, likes to throw things at people, but still pretty good offensive lineman that's out there, Richie Incognito. Eric, what does PFF have to say about Mr. Incognito, and is he a fit for the Minnesota Vikings?
So my first year as a Pro Football Focus employee, my first few articles were these, like, best free agent signings, blah, blah, blah. And Incognito was the best for, you know, one of the best for the Bills that year because he was cheap and he graded really well, and he's continued to grade really well. My issue with Incognito, and this is probably why the Vikings won't sign him, is the Vikings made an effort last year to get rid of Alex Boone a year into his contract because he didn't fit in, right? And he wasn't cohesive with the group. He was, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I feel like Incognito would just be taking another chance. Now, he's far better than Boone, right? So you might be willing to take a little bit of that risk, but I'm guessing that he's not going to, you know, come and play for the Vikings. But
is he good?
He is good. He's a good football player for sure. Yeah. Although when he was talking about retiring, he was talking about, like, his kidneys shutting down. Like, his tweets, like, right before he nationalizing his retirement, I was like, okay, man, like, that makes a ton of sense. Like, go get yourself right, man. Maybe read a book or two. But, like, you know, it doesn't seem to have liked reading those actual history books in the off season.
He just didn't go far back enough.
Oh,
they didn't go far back enough.
So, God. Luke, what is what's your take on Mr. Incognito and you know, his potentially being someone that you know he has a connection to Tony Sperano.
Yeah, they played together in the Wildcat years. And I honestly, I think it would make sense if after the Willie Beavers thing, Tony Sperano is just expelled from any and all evaluations. he's obviously a good player, even though he's 35. He'd be a one-year rental, and he'd probably make the offensive line better. But right now we have a lot of things we want to do with our cap space, and I think all of them are more important than a one-year rental at left guard.
And guard is the least important position on the offensive line statistically. So if it's going to be a place where they're going to make – yes. If you just look at – and the numbers bear it out, but if you just think about it, like, I think it's because no matter how good your left guard is, he's not going to block the John Randall type three technique, like the Aaron Donald and the Fletcher Cox. Like, there's almost no benefit to having an elite guy there because he's going to get dominated by the elite players like JJ Watt. And then every other week they're playing Shamar Stephen. So it doesn't matter there either. It is an interesting position, but that's why.
Interesting. Yeah. Do you think left guards double team more often with the center than right guards do?
Yes. Yep. And it's the backside. Yep. That's true as well. So it's the backside of the quarterback. They get more help. The differential between players that they face in terms of quality, like I said, you go from, a guy like Shamar Stephen 1 week to Aaron Donald the next. It's sort of like, you know, In either case, it doesn't matter how bad you are, you can still probably keep Stephen from the quarterback. And no matter how good you are, Donald's going to dominate you. So my biggest narrative for that.
Yeah, so one of the things that I, you know, because I'm kind of a nerd and, you know, playing around some things here as we roll along through the offseason to keep myself occupied here. And I started looking at, the supporting cast, because it was one of the things I looked into during the season, see which quarterbacks were able to kind of play above their supporting cast. And so I'm looking at these offensive lines. And so I did a ranking, a preliminary ranking here for the entire league. Probably put an article together at some point here over the course of the week. But at the end of last season, PFF ranked the Vikings as the 22nd overall offensive line. I think Football Outsiders had them at 19th. And PlayerProfiler.com had their protection rate rated at 25th in the league. And so I have gone kind of looking at PFF grades and, you know, weighting by positional importance. And I have the Vikings coming in at 26th in the league. And so, Eric, I guess my question for you, and then Luke, I obviously want you to chime in as well, is should we be nervous? Because I know that there was a lot made, you know, we've kind of made some jokes and poked fun at a little bit. There's a lot made of, you know, Vikings Twitter absolutely melting down, losing their mind because we didn't pick a guard in the first couple rounds of the draft. But from what I'm finding is if, you know, you had a rookie guard and plugged them into one of the guard spots, it really wouldn't make that much of a difference, kind of based on what you just said with, you know, those interior spots not being that impactful to the overall line overall. But 26 doesn't sound very good. Is that the sort of thing that isn't really being talked about a lot that could derail the Vikings' kind of hopes for next season?
In my opinion, I think it's an issue. But at the same time, I think a guy like Colby Gossett is somebody who can play right away in the Vikings scheme if need be. Isidore is a person that they drafted a season ago. Avante Collins as well. So I think there's depth there. And I think when, you know, our minds, you know, Vikings, you know, fans' minds, we look at like 2016 as like the blueprint for what can go wrong. And if you actually look at that, right, what happened? Well, Mike Harris, I think, probably got cancer or something like that. I mean, we still don't know. But Mike Harris left. Both tackles got hurt. Brandon Fusco was a disaster, right? And then they got rid of John Sullivan when they probably, in hindsight, probably could have kept him around and had him been a backup. And so, like, literally everything went wrong there. And I think that we saw that and said, okay, and then the offense can't function. And after that, they had an offensive coordinator for whom, like, there was almost no, you know, step drop back that he didn't like, right? So flash forward a season, right? They still had some issues, right? I think like Reef and Remmers were average, maybe a little bit below average. Each of them was hurt a lot. We saw a decent amount of Rashad Hill, who wasn't great, but they schemed around a lot of those things. And then Case Keenum was very good at avoiding sacks when he was pressured. And so we saw kind of what can happen when you just take an offensive line from really, really bad to slightly below average, and then you add to that a guy like Pat Shurmur who can scheme around it, and an offense can be extremely functional in that sense. So I think that's where I would talk Vikings fans off the ledge in terms of, like, I don't dispute the fact that they're 27th, actually. I dispute the fact that that's necessarily the worst thing that's ever happened to the world. You know what I'm saying?
And with something like that, you know, let's say, you know, They're kind of in that, you know, that bottom quartile of the league from an offensive line perspective. How much of a difference would, say, like a Will Hernandez, or even let's say they got Quentin Nelson in there? What kind of a difference would that make for kind of the overall offensive line performance if you were kind of saying, okay, so we got rid of, yeah, I guess we'll say that, I guess we have the one gap of the right guard and put an elite player there next to Mike Remmers. How big of a difference would that make for kind of how the overall line was perceived, even with Elflein and Easton still on the line?
I think it's less than the drop off from going from average to TJ Clemmings level, right? So if that's the case, like, the worst you can be is 32nd, so five spots. So I would say you're probably moving up into the early 20s, maybe the teens if you're lucky. But again, like, the offensive line's one of those things where, you know, no one player moves the lever too much. And so with a guy like Nelson, I think he's a great piece. And I think the Colts did a made a decent move by drafting him there. But I think in terms of moving the needle for the Vikings, it's going to have to be like, I think what the Vikings are going to have to resolve is the fact that Kirk Cousins is actually pretty good when it comes to play action, deep drops, throwing to tight ends out of multiple tight end formation. Like, how do they like resolve the fact that Cousins sort of thrives in a McVay type offense when they're going to be playing more of a Shermer, DeFilippo type offense?
I wouldn't be shocked if we saw more like 12 personnel.
13,
yeah. 13 person. Yeah. Like, just throw a bunch of tight ends in there, get David Morgan in there blocking, and then only have like two deep routes, but hope that you can. And which is kind of what Norv Turner did, and it kind of screwed the 2015 Vikings, but that's because they had max protect and still couldn't protect. So, I mean, the line was a disaster for a long time. The way I always thought of it was that, like, the Vikings kind of changed the light bulbs all at the same time, and then they all went out at the same time. Like, they had, for the longest time, you know, Sullivan, Lode Holt, Fusco, Khalil, and, you know, maybe some machinations with, like, Charlie Johnson or somebody else in the interior there. And, like, all those players went away, like, pretty much within a year of each other. And they've kind of been digging themselves out of that hole ever since. So I think to piggyback on, yeah, being the 27th offensive line or 26th offensive line is probably not the worst thing in the world. It'll have an effect, but probably not a disastrous one that will turn a 12-4 team into an 8-8 team, which is, I think, what we saw happen in 2016. But I also don't think it's particularly reasonable to expect, you know, 2 years after your whole offensive line left to maintain a good roster and also fix that problem. I don't think it's reasonable to expect that.
Yeah,
and I think the thing 2016 was more hurt by the tackles too. Like, we had some movement on the interior, but by week 8, it was Jeremiah Searles and TJ Clemmings at tackle, and I don't think an offense can function when that's there. So as long as you have Reef and Remmers, who are going to be average, probably, or at least close to it, I think you'll be able to have a functional team. And I also think if you boil down, like, how you can use the line that we have, like, with Elflein, Easton, and then, you know, hopefully somebody like Colby Cassette who can move around, that gives you a screen game for Dalvin Cook. That gives you an ability to change the gaps that you use and not have to go A gap, B gap against bad blocking math all the time. And that can possibly help you to, you know, spread the defenses like east and west and kind of make it less likely for you to get into like impossible offensive line situations.
Yeah, and I think one of the issues of 2016 that I think is being overlooked too by a lot of people is that Sam Bradford joined the team, you know, less than a week before the season started, and while he performed well at times, I just don't know necessarily like if, like, when there's pressure on you, I feel like, and he did perform okay under pressure, you know, by our grades and everything, but I just think there's a little bit missing there when, like, you just, like, the offense isn't second nature to you. And so when things break down, I do think that that can be an issue. So Teddy Bridgewater was far more, you know, Teddy Bridgewater actually faced pressure more often in 2015 with that offensive line, and, you know, and they were a little bit better as a team. So I don't know. I do think depth is an issue, but they've done a better job of addressing it, you know, through the draft and getting guys that are both like guys that can play now and then guys that are projects like Brian O'Neill.
Yeah, and I think calling protections too, like when you came into the season, you know, a week before it started, you can probably get the basics of the passing game down, and you saw him do that, right? They had simplified concepts, but he was able to execute them. But you're not going to be changing the protections as much at the line of scrimmage, and you're not going to be like identify a blitz or move everything around. That kind of thing is just not going to be as efficient as it would be with a team that you've been with for 3 years. And, you know, that might not sound very optimistic because we might end up with the same problem, but at least, you know, Kirk Cousins has a whole training camp this time. And he's going to not be working with a rookie center like Case Keenum was, who had also just come in that season and was working with a rookie center. So I don't think the protection calls were as sophisticated in 2017 either. So there's a reason to think that perhaps, you know, you'll have fewer pressures caused by, oh, this blitzer was completely unblocked because they just didn't have the right protection called. And I don't think that a grade-based model is going to really foresee that because it's a much more nebulous concept than something that can be, like, seen on tape. But I think it's possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you guys made me feel less bad about things. And you mentioned a couple players there that I think, right now, a big part of the reason that the Vikings rank as low as they do is that guys like, Nick Easton and Pat Elflein, too, just didn't grade very well in the system. Pat Elflein, say he's a rookie. And one of the things that we hear very often, I think every fan base does this, is that there's an assumption kind of baked in that rookie players are going to improve from their first season to their subsequent seasons. And so I guess, Eric, from what you guys have seen at PFF, I guess, how often, I guess, does that happen? If a player comes in and grades very poorly in year one, that they make a big leap, in the following years. And then I guess since we're talking about offensive line, and offensive line might be a bit more challenging, but are there underlying metrics or underlying things that we might be able to look at that might predict if a player is going to improve as we move forward? Because every fan base thinks that all of their young players are going to get better every year, and we know that's not really what happens. I guess, is there a way to predict who gets better and who won't get better?
Yeah, so I haven't looked at this systematically, but I will say a couple things in terms of Elflein. Our center grades our center metrics are of the offensive line the least stable. So they're, with centers, the issue is that they're often, they don't give up that many pressures, right? So the difference between Elflein and like Rodney Hudson is, far fewer than the difference between Riley Reiff and Tyron Smith, if that makes sense. So like, it's a couple plays here and there in the passing game that's probably keeping Elflein down in terms of a grade. And then in the running game, I would just say that like the Vikings weren't particularly successful as a running football team last year. And I think that like that is, in terms of like that's just something they need to improve upon. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that like they started a different offensive line in the preseason than they did in the week one. And then Elflein was hurt a decent amount. And then I think this can't be understated either. They played an absolute murderer's row of interior defensive linemen a season ago, right? So they played, you even start week one, it's Cameron Jordan. Week two, it's Cameron Hayward, Stephon Tuitt. Week three, Gerald McCoy. Like you can go through the entire, schedule and pick out like all-star players that they're playing against. And so I think if you adjust for that, and then you also look at the fact that it's very noisy. There's a very good chance that Elflein, for example, was simply on the bottom end of a distribution there, and we'll see him ascend. So I'm bullish on him. Easton, I'm less so, but again, I think the Vikings are being sound there by putting their weakest lineman at left guard and just like sort of going with it. But that's kind of my two cents on it.
Okay, I like that, Luke. I guess what are your thoughts on that? I guess the general optimism that our young players are going to get better.
I guess it comes down to like what the expectation for pressure is. Cause like if Elflein, like this happens a lot with offensive line with like the grades where they'll get downgraded on a play because they mess up, but it doesn't turn into a pressure. So they don't get assigned a pressure, and that'll happen a lot. And then suddenly you'll have a player like this happened last year where Riley Reiff had like this super average to below average grade, but like hadn't given up any sacks, and everybody was up in arms about like, how can that be possible? And I think that kind of makes me feel like if his grade doesn't improve, but he doesn't give up a bunch of pressure because he's still a center and he's also like good on, screenplays and other those like sweep plays, toss plays, stuff like that. I think that gives you room to grow, and I think that's just an advantage of being on the interior, is that, like, if he doesn't improve that much, that's probably fine. And, it obviously would be better if he had a better center. I would probably want more out of him in his second year in terms of the protection calls, and I think having Kirk Cousins, who is so excellent pre-snap, which was kind of his reputation even before that really cool series came out where he was talking to all the rookie quarterbacks. Hopefully the protections can be a little better there too. So either he gets better at it or Kirk Cousins relieves him of that duty, which I don't think Case Keenum was capable of doing. I think that could also lead to a bump up in year two.
Careful, Luke. That's the 51st best player in the NFL you're talking about there.
That's amazing. When you're talking.
when you're talking about former Vikings quarterback Case Keenum. So
hey, if you talk about just 2017 and forget that he was terrible for like 4 years before that, it kind of makes sense. He was pretty cool.
And if you squint about like what the list means, like I have no idea what the list means, right?
No, he's above Derek Carr. That tracks.
Does track. But if
Derek Carr is not good.
If it's valuable, Derek Carr. But if it's valuable, I mean, because the problem is like that when that list had J.J. Watt as like 35th last year, you just kind of knew it was a joke, because if it's what he did in 2016, then guy played three games, so there's no way he's the 30th best player. And if it's what he's going to be in the future, there's no way he's the 35th. Like, so I have no idea what that list means. So I have no idea. Like, obviously, it's weird that Keenum's 51st, given that he was Sam Bradford's backup. But yeah, it's an odd list for me.
Speaking of backup quarterbacks, you guys heard anything about one of those quarterbacks? They got it for the New York Jets. How's Teddy doing? Have you heard anything?
Teddy looks real good, man.
Yeah, everybody seems really happy with him. He's moving around better than everybody thought.
Well, that's
and he's rocking like a really awesome number. Like two is the number a boss wears, man.
Two is a swaggy number. Although he might take five back because they traded Christian Hackenberg for something somehow.
A conditional seventh round pick. I mean, that's basically someone like got the lint in their pockets and was like, "We'll give you this for Christian Hackenberg," and they were like, "We'll take it."
Baker in a Reef tweet that said, "It's amazing that we all make fun of John Gruden for being stuck in 2013 because 2013 was Christian Hackenberg's good freshman year."
Yeah. Oh. If Hackenberg, obviously Hackenberg's a W for PFF. If Baker Mayfield like works out, then this will have been a good year for PFF in terms of
quarterback value. He threw three interceptions at OTAs. He's a bust now.
I had to make fun of somebody in the PFF Skype chat who wrote that Danny Amendola struggled in day one of Dolphins OTAs. So this is worse than draft season, to be honest.
Is Tannehill healthy?
Oh, way worse.
Is Tannehill back and doing stuff?
Have you guys heard my Tannehill joke? So the thing with Tannehill is I've done like a handful of Dolphins games back when I used to collect data for PFF. And I one time like looked up and I was like, I've never seen Ryan Tannehill play well. It's happened before, but I've never happened to like, my eyes have never seen him play well. So even if he is healthy, if he plays well in front of me, it'll be the first time.
I don't think I've watched a Tannehill game. I don't feel qualified to have Tannehill takes.
No, I just find it very unlikely that a dude who was playing wide receiver for a couple years of his college career is now going to be a very good NFL quarterback.
You can see the bias there, though, because you're a Vikings fan and you only watch the Bears play the Vikings at Soldier Field. You would have thought that Cutler was a Hall of Fame quarterback, though, because remember how he would just have these horrible years and then just throw four touchdowns against Chris Cook and what's the other guy's name? Robinson. Remember 21. I can't remember.
Allen Robinson?
No. Josh Robinson.
Josh Robinson.
Good outside corner that we ruined by trying to make a slot corner, even though he never played it before.
Well, what we've ruined is a great
good thing that never happened again.
Punt gunner is what he was. He was he still is. He's like the Kasim Osgood of corners.
So you mean to tell me taking a cornerback that's going to be mainly a special teamer and then we're going to move him out of position is a bad idea?
Shut your mouth, Luke.
I think the lottery. I think the lottery ticket's a decent one, but he's a great example of he's a great example of if you want to play a guy in the slot in the pros, he better have played slot in college because it's a really tough projection. I'm looking right at you, Vernon Hargraves.
Oh yeah.
Oh, Mike Hughes, please stay outside.
Please. Yeah,
he played like 13 snaps in the slot last year or something crazy.
And Mackenzie Alexander had zero, right?
No, Alexander was a slottish guy in college. not predominantly, but he had a decent number of snaps. Like, he actually projected. I was actually happy when they picked him.
I mean, he was productive last year. Like, I don't think Mike Hughes is going to play much defense this year, except for, like, dime packages.
So Mackenzie Alexander is a great example of a person whose PFF grade is far more indicative of his performance than his stats, because, you know, he was only targeted, what, 20, 30 times, but one of them was an interception, which swings that hugely. And the interception was a Kirk Cousins pass that wasn't even intended for the receiver that Alexander was covering, right? It was,
I think it was a tip, wasn't it?
He airmailed somebody on that, and then went straight to him.
Totally slipped, yeah. I remember.
So in that case, like, his PFF grade is probably more indicative of pass rating against, which is really low because he made an interception on that one play. And I don't think he gave up a touchdown this season, which, you know, speaks to him, but also is a bit random.
Yeah, that's why I usually like to look at yards per cover snap versus passer. Because, like, passer rating on cornerbacks, while it's, like, really fun to visualize and to think about, like, oh, throwing at, you know, Xavier Rhodes is worse than throwing it in the dirt every snap. And those are always fun, like, little nuggets. Like, I think yards per cover snap's way more stable because, like, touchdowns and interceptions don't completely ruin them.
Yeah.
I also don't like that whole, like, why isn't throwing it in the dirt every time a zero?
I mean,
that formula seems broken.
Well, because back in the day, I'm telling you though, like, and I watch a lot of old football. That's why I love to, like, bless you guys with, like, a couple of random names every once in a while. I watch a lot of old football, and some of these dudes should have just thrown it in the dirt every play. Like if you've ever watched Tom Tupa play quarterback for the Phoenix Cardinals, you would have. You were a Phoenix, because the guy changed positions to punter and was actually successful. If you would have watched some of these, like, I was watching a Dallas Phoenix game, and Neil Lomax, they talked about him having the eighth highest passer rating of all time. And this was, like, in the 80s, and his career passer rating was, like, 82. So, like, it was just a different game when they invented that number, I think.
It was totally a different game. And it was, like, based in – I mean, that number was invented in, like, the 70s.
Yeah.
Like, it means nothing anymore.
Yeah. So it's one of those things, but I do agree. Like, why? I think it's because if you throw an interception on all your passes, your passer rating is zero.
Yeah, that feels like it should be negative.
Yeah,
negative numbers frighten people, though.
That's right. It took
can't parse that.
Babylonians forever, man. To accept, I think I'm gonna lose my math card if I can't remember if it's the Babylonians or not. But yeah, it took humanity a long time to accept the negative number.
Well, all right,
are we becoming a math history podcast?
I feel like we've gone completely off the rails, and I can think of no way to bring this back to football in any kind of cogent manner here. Was there anything else that you guys wanted to get into before we wrap this thing up? I mean, we've talked offensive line. We've talked about why even if the Vikings offensive line isn't that good, probably isn't the end of the world. We've talked about why Elf line, you know, should improve this year. Easton kind of is what he is, but he plays a important position that's not all that important. And tackle should be average. I guess, Eric, you are, like, you know, the hardest working man in the offseason here, going team by team, coming up with new segments every week on the forecast, telling us about the gospel in the Lou International version of the Bible. What else are you working on, and what have you guys been talking about over there on the forecast?
Yeah, so right now, a lot of it is just kind of like joking around about, the Evan Silvas talking about, you know, reading all the beat writers and projecting Jerick McKinnon to get 70, you know, receptions and everything. And a lot of it is sort of these, looking at win totals, looking at, you know, we even had a couple weeks ago, we printed a far too early look at the week one spreads. And actually, the Vikings made an appearance in their week one game against the 49ers. We think that they're under in the first game of the season has some value. Now, you have to be a big time degenerate to bet that. But that was something that we talked about one of the last episodes of the forecast. But yeah, a lot of, you know, as you guys know, an analyst for PFF is a contestant on The Bachelorette, so that's hilarious. We've gotten a lot of mileage out of that. So, yeah, it's been a fun time.
Good stuff, good stuff. And Luke, you already let us know that you have your big time training camp work on deck. So we are very excited about that. What do you guys, when's the next episode of the Other Purple Journal dropping?
Probably this weekend. We're actually recording that tomorrow. I also had post-draft, I did a little more philosophical piece about why you should never draft kickers. And that basically boils down to the fact that the difference between a good kicker and a bad kicker is like two or three field goals. And it's pretty unlikely that those two or three field goals happen to fall in the games where it would even make a difference.
Is that so, Luke? Is that so? Hey, the missed field goals will happen in games that don't matter? Because I don't think that's what history tells you.
Well, you have to be really unlucky, which is true of the Vikings.
If Kai Forbath misses that kick against Seattle, do we spend the entire offseason wondering how to rebuild his psyche?
No.
Probably not, because we didn't draft him, which is another really good reason to not draft kickers.
Exactly. Kai Forbath. So, for one thing, Kai Forbath's kick against the Saints before that game went bananas was one of the best kicks in Minnesota Vikings history, right? Like, putting like 53-yard field goal, like straight down. And then, of course, we draft a kicker because Kai Forbath's biggest asset to the Vikings was that he was expendable.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That, like,
because kicking is golf and it's all mental.
Exactly. So when a guy loses his mental fastball, the thing that Walsh didn't have was that he wasn't expendable, right? So we had to, like, baby him, and we had to, like, walk, you know, Zimmer had to watch, like, for the first time in his life, had to watch how he talked and all this kind of stuff. And it was, like, ridiculous. It's like, you should have just, like, cut him. And this guy, not only is he a round higher, but he's, like, three more picks than Walsh because they traded to get him. I just think that that's a recipe for disaster and probably why you should bet the Vikings under, if you are so inclined.
10.5.
It's ridiculous.
So you can find that on PurpleBTSD, and there's a lot more other points being made about why drafting kickers is stupid and why it doesn't matter who your kicker is. Probably near the beginning of June or hopefully near the beginning of June, like first or second week in June, I'll start releasing those. And I'll probably release them a lot or release them pretty quickly in quick succession, and they'll take you right to the start of training camp.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, gentlemen, as always, it is a pleasure to get you on, Anna, and talk about some football and some math history and, you know, quarterbacks who used to also play punter and things of that sort. Missed you, gentlemen. Good to be on. Good to talk about it. Listeners, thank you for sticking with us. I know you were really itching to get some math history in you today, so you're welcome. And we will be back soon. Have a good one.